Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. My panel today, Charlie McConnellogue, Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Ón Oibrín, Sinn Féin spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage, and Róisín Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie or tweet to @SaturdayRTE. Now, this weekend marks the first anniversary since the very first case of COVID-19 was confirmed in Ireland. Since then, well over 200,000 cases have been confirmed and sadly, 4,300 people have lost their lives. But thankfully, we are now embarking on an ambitious vaccination rollout programme. And as you heard there, there is good news on that front today with the approval of the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the US and the expectation that it will be approved for use in the EU in 12 days' time. So for the very latest on our vaccination plans, I'm joined now by Professor Breen McCrae, Chair of the High Level Task Force on COVID-19 Vaccination. Good afternoon, Breen. You're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Katie. Thank you for having me on.
If we can just start at the start, Breen, because I think people are a little bamboozled at this stage about all the various timelines and targets and, you know, who should be done by when. And just look at what's going to happen in the next month in March. The over 85s, I know a lot of them will be heading to vaccination centres today to get their first jab. When will that cohort be completed?
We expect to complete the over 85s for their first dose in the coming week. So by the end of the coming week, so the week beginning the 1st of March, that's the target for that. That's for dose one.
And dose two?
Dose two is mid-May. I think that is the date for that.
Okay. And then, but as you say, no, everything else doesn't stand at a standstill while that part of the vaccination programme is going ahead. So other cohorts will be being vaccinated at the same time.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's probably worth, Katie, giving you the figures, just the most up-to-date figures. And I think up to last Wednesday evening, there's almost 400,000 people having vaccinated. So that's 150,000 vaccinations for cohort one. That's those in long-term care facilities. Over 200,000 for frontline healthcare workers, and almost 30,000 of those over 85s. So they're very significant numbers. So we certainly will cross 400,000 this week, and if we go right into next week, we'll get very close to or exceed 500,000 vaccinations administered. So it's really where we started off in the initial weeks, we were averaging about 45,000 vaccinations per week. So really the numbers are starting to rise up significantly now.
Okay. And can I ask you just in relation to the programme over the last week in particular, we know that, and I'm sure you'll have heard the reports from various GPs of deliveries of vaccines not arriving, having to let down their patients. And I know, I appreciate you don't have an operational role in this, but is this a supply? Is this just purely down to supply issues? And what kind of supply issues are you facing? Are we still facing?
Well, no, it's not so much a supply issue in that case. No, the HSE in particular are aware that for a number of GP practices that there have been operational issues regarding ordering and delivery schedules, particularly in rural areas. So the first thing I should say is that, you know, this should not have happened. And I think everyone associated with the programme is very disappointed that this has happened. And I think the GPs themselves are naturally frustrated, those involved. But I think more significantly, those that have been over 85s waiting for their vaccines. I listened back to the Joe Duffy show, the Mindline show, during the weekend. And it was terrible to hear the frustrations, both of the over 85s and their families. So I think everyone is listening to that and trying to find solutions. So the HSE have been working intensively with the IMO and the ICGB during the week to put things to right and put in place, stood up a new GP order support team to try and make sure that all the logistical issues that were associated with this new model, because it is a new model. I mean, this is very, very different from the normal flu vaccine rollout, which involves GPs and pharmacies. As you know, the complexities associated with these vaccines caused us to have to actually change the model very significantly over a short period of time. So there have been logistical challenges, but as I said, the aim is to get those out of the way by the new models and the new solutions put in place. So in the coming week, there will be over 44,000 doses going out to over 500 GP practices. And the aim is, as planned, to complete that first cycle for the over 85s and to start the next cycle in that age group, which is the 80s to 84s, in this coming week as well. So, as I say, everyone wants to get that right, and everyone has been working night and day to try and address these issues. But the vast majority of the three models of the GP situation, the GP hubs, the larger GP practices, and then those that the smaller practices budding up to larger practices, they were the three models. They're now up and running and working now, and we expect the next cycles to be much more regular and to have many fewer problems in the rollout.
Okay. And then maybe just addressing that issue about supply challenges.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, I think your listeners would be well used to hearing about the supplies up and down. So things have been stabilising, but I better mention one particular issue that's just happened in the last 48 hours, that we got very, very late notice from AstraZeneca about two changes, both a delivery yesterday that was planned and a delivery in the middle of next week, both of which are cancelled. So that's what that's going to mean, is that in for this week and for next week, there's going to be a reduction on drugs, combined reduction of around about 25,000 vaccinations. However, and this is the very big however, this is not a reduction in deliveries. This is a rebalancing by AstraZeneca themselves. So from next weekend and into the following week, we'll be able to recover completely what has been lost. So the net overall effect is close to zero because, as I say, it's a reordering of the schedule rather than a reduction. But very, very frustrating for ourselves and very, very frustrating for all of those waiting for the vaccines. But as I say, it'll
catch up with itself very quickly.
As late as yesterday afternoon for a delivery in the middle of next week was really very frustrating. But we will recover it. But it does mean, so just to be very clear, we will meet our target of completing all dose ones in long-term care facilities in the end of the coming week. And we expect to finish dose ones for the healthcare workers in the second week of March.
Okay. And just as you mentioned AstraZeneca there, the Irish Examiner is reporting today that just 36% of AstraZeneca vaccines that have been delivered to Ireland have been used to date. That's not the case, is it?
No, that's not the case. I'm very glad you've asked me that because I just saw the article appearing on social media last night. So I went straight to check what the actual facts are with this. So to date, 86,400 doses of AstraZeneca have arrived in the country, and 99.8% of those doses have gone out. So I'm very happy to address that. I think it was drawn from an ECDC website, and I think either the wrong inferences were drawn or indeed the updating of the ECD side of things hadn't happened. But I'm absolutely very clear on this matter and double checked it again.
There is no AstraZeneca.
99.8%. I mean, the demand, I mean, this, I suppose it's important to state, and it's one of the core principles of the rollout, is that the only limitation on the rollout will be supply. And as soon as a delivery arrives, we move swiftly to ensure that it's given to those who need it most. And I've shown these data in various presentations. Within a matter of days, and always less than a week, we have administered the vaccines that have arrived in the country, allowing for the sort of stock management we have to put in place for second doses. But
okay,
you know,
and allowing, I suppose we should just say it again, allowing for those hiccups that we just talked about in relation to the logistics of getting it out to various
GPs. But just to say, Katie, even with those hiccups, as you refer to them, that has not held up the reaching of our targets. So still, with all of those things happening and the correction of those, we still have reached the targets on a week-on-week basis in terms of making sure that whatever vaccines arrive in, we get them administered in that period of time.
Okay. Well, talking about targets then and longer-term targets, I mean, the Taoiseach's speech this week was very much built around the target, the longer-term target for vaccination. That's 82% of adults getting their first jab by the end of June. I mean, we heard yesterday that the target in Northern Ireland is for everyone who is eligible for vaccination to receive a first jab by the end of July. And we also are there a third of the way through to their target now. So Sure. It seems extraordinary that we will go from where we are ourselves now.
Well, no, with those numbers, I mean, we would have assisted the Department of Taoiseach in actually developing those numbers based on our models. So based on the supply projections and despite what the fluctuations up and down that are necessary part of all of this, we have a high degree of confidence in what will be delivered in quarter two. So, I mean, the figures and these figures appeared in the COVID resilience and recovery report that passed ahead during the week. For quarter one, unless there are any significant changes between now and the end, we expect to get very close to 1.25 million doses in quarter one. But at the moment, we expect in quarter two to be getting over a million a month for April, May and June, and that we'll get close to 3.8 million. So if you sum those together, you get over 5 million doses will have arrived in the country, you know, subject to all the caveats. And I think everyone is aware that things can't go wrong. But those numbers include the reduction in the AstraZeneca that has been well publicized for recent weeks. That there was a more than 50% reduction, but the model includes those reductions. With a significant over 2 million coming in from the Pfizer vaccines. So if you work through those and bearing in mind that the vaccinatable population in Ireland is about 3.75 million, that is those aged 18 and above. And if you look at 80% of that, that's 3 million. So we do expect out of the 5 million that will have arrived in the country to have achieved 3 million people that will have received their first dose of a vaccine. So I think the T-shirt figures are important, and I think, but certainly the model backs them up significantly. And it all comes down to the stability of the supplies. But I think we're getting, despite the up and downs that may happen on a weekly or monthly basis, we're getting more and more confident this is the case. And this is the model right across Europe, as okay. you know, as well.
Okay, can I ask you about the new vaccine allocation strategy that was announced this week? Those with deemed to be very high risk moved up into cohort four.
Yes.
First of all, when can those people, because I mean they're in a very, very difficult position right now, and you know, a lot of them with young families and you know, not maybe able to isolate in a way that maybe more elderly people might be. When can they expect to get a call?
Yes, so let me give some context as well. As you know, cohorts 1, 2 and 3 are the long-term care facilities, the frontline healthcare workers, now the over 70s. So a new cohort 4, 5, 6 and 7 have been developed by NIAC, who recommended those to government, and the Cabinet has approved those. And that has moved some of the most vulnerable populations up the list. So cohort 4 are those aged 16 to 69, and that 16 is important, with a medical condition that puts them at a very high risk of severe disease and death. And they, in general, will be vaccinated directly after those aged 70 and above. However, there is an exception. There's a cohort of those with specific medical conditions, which are going to be called 4A, that puts them really at very high risk, and for which there's a recommendation that they receive the mRNA vaccine. And that's those with cancer, chronic kidney disease, and those that are immunocompromised. And there's lots more details that, you know, underpinning those headings. They will begin on Monday week.
On Monday week.
Yeah, and I was speaking to Dr. Colin Henry earlier on, the Chief Clinical Officer in the HSE, and the HSE, led in this case by Dr. Colin Henry in this clinical context, are working through the various subsections under cohort 4, 5, 6, and 7. To identify the timings, identify the best locations, the best referral processes. There are some challenges with this in terms of Ireland not having a national disease register, for example, but identifying the various cohorts and finding the best way of actually engaging with them and providing the most suitable vaccination location for them. For some of them, it will be a hospital and it might be referral through their consultants, for example. For others, it might be their GPs. For others, it might be in vaccination centres. So that's what the HSE and colleagues are working through at the moment. But I'm pleased to say two things. One is that that particular subgroup of the very high risk, their vaccination will commence on Monday week. That's the week beginning March 8th. And secondly, the group 4C, which we're calling them people aged 18 to 69, with again medical conditions, but with a very high risk, they will commence in the week of beginning March 8th or March 15th. They're just working at that, but probably the week beginning March 8th.
Okay, I think that'll be very welcome news for
I think it's been received very, very well, Katie, yeah. And I think both the broader patient advocacy groups, but the clinical community, I've been assured, really welcome this. And I think that it adheres to the principles that have underpinned the vaccination rollout, that those most in need are getting it. And I think surveys of the broader Irish population have said the thing that's most important to them is fairness and equity in all of this, and I think this reflects that as well.
Okay. You mentioned the mass vaccination centres there. How many of them are we planning in all for the whole rollout?
Well, at the moment, there's 37 that have been identified. So 11 of those are the larger vaccination centres. The other 26 of those are on a one per county basis. But I think that's just the beginning. I mean, I think they'll be scaled as into what is needed right across the country. But you will know already that a number of the larger vaccination centres are already being used. Today, the Munster Technological University one and the Maryland Park one in Galway. But I attended the one at the Helix in DC last Saturday. It was hugely impressive. 48 booths. They can run up to 50 booths, and they can run up to 5,000 vaccinations a day, running a 12-hour day. So in a 12-hour day, 7-day week, those large vaccination centres can do 35,000 vaccinations a week.
Is that the plan, Breen, a 7-day-a-week operation in all these centres?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, that's, like, when we move to the larger volumes of vaccine doses arriving in the country, it has always been the intention that, as I say, the limitation will only be on supply, so that the infrastructure, the resources, the people will scale up to match the supplies coming in. So when we get into at least 1 million a month in quarter two and maybe closer to 2 million in quarter three, that the infrastructure will match that. So in terms of the current 37 vaccinations.
Just to be clear, so we are actually talking about in quarter three, you're saying 500,000 people being vaccinated every week.
That the potential is there for that, indeed. Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. That if you work through over 300,000 vaccinations per week are possible with the large centres, and over 200,000 vaccinations per week are possible with the county based centres. So, I mean, yeah, that would bring you up to over 500,000 a week is possible. So that means the infrastructure will be scaled up to match supply.
How many people will we need to do those vaccinations then?
So we've worked through this in terms of not just it's the vaccinators themselves. So if you think the baseline is the community vaccinators, the GPs, the pharmacists, the peer vaccinators in hospitals. But you'll know that a recruitment process was launched by Paul Reid the week before last, and already there's over 1,100 applications for that. And we expect to bring the vaccinator workforce up, the dedicated vaccinator workforce, to 2,000 and above, sitting on top of, if you like, the groupings like the GPs and the pharmacists that have done so well in delivering all the national vaccination programs to date. So we're matching the vaccinator workforce plus all the administrative support teams, the IT support teams, the traffic management, security, all of those. So we've modelled out all of those, and the HSE have done all of this, done a wonderful job in it, creating a kind of a template for all of these large vaccination centres. But certainly what I witnessed in the DCU last weekend was a very impressive system that can work, that that people come in, they're registered on the spot, and that they can be in and out in less than 30 minutes.
Oh, we've got a question. Sorry to cut across to you, Breen. I'm just anxious to get through. We've got a question in here from a listener saying, could you please ask Breen McCrath why GPs are prohibited from using local halls? Because she's saying that GP surgeries aren't designed to cope with mass vaccination in this kind of a scenario. Is that being looked at?
No, I think what was put in place very quickly after the kind of guidance as regards, I mean, everyone would realise that the initial idea was that the AstraZeneca vaccine was going to be used as a community-based vaccine, and everything was going to happen in the normal way, like with the flu vaccination. And so then it had to be changed. And the three models were the large hubs, like the Helix, the large clinics, that is clinics that would have typically two or three GPs and cohorts over 200, but they would have the scale of staff, the scale of space for the vaccinations. And then there would be the buddy up centres where the smaller GP practices would partner up with larger practices to address that issue.
Okay.
Now, it was said that was the best of addressing this, but creating a whole range of other options would have created a really massive logistical challenge around the country itself. So, but this model is up and running now and working, and okay. I'd say we will hit our target this week of the of completing the 72,000 over 85 by the end of the coming week.
Okay, Johnson & Johnson, that expectation now that it will get approval for use in the EU on the 11th of March. Is that going to, has that already been factored into the modelling you've done here?
Yes, yes, it has. I mean, it's a very exciting development, and we were all very hopeful that the FDA would do as they've done, and we expect that the Janssen vaccine made by Johnson & Johnson, that it will go forward in mid-March to the EMA, and everyone is very hopeful. I mean, the clinical trial data look very impressive. So, we're hopeful. So we've spoken to Janssen. In fact, one of the lead people in Europe for Janssen is an Irish lady, Alicia Daly, and the expectation is, if approved, that the initial doses will be coming in early April. So we expect to receive approximately 600,000 Janssen vaccines coming through in April, May and June, and then it will scale up after that. So it's another very, very important development, which would add to our portfolio and also reduce risk, which is an important part. I mean, once we have a diversified portfolio of vaccines coming into the country. So it's very, very good news. And as you mentioned, it's not only a single-dose vaccine, the only single-dose vaccine so far, but it is relatively easy to use from a logistical perspective.
And on that, Breen, is that going to be the one that we can envisage pharmacists being involved in?
Not clear yet. I mean, I think that's a possibility, but we'll have to wait and see what the recommendations coming from the European Medicines Agency is, what the recommendations are, what they tell us, what the guidance is, so all of those decisions. But I think it's important to say that the pharmacists are going to, as they always have done, will play a very important part of the overall rollout, and they're now registering on the portal for their own vaccinations as vaccinators. So I think that's important, but I think they will play a very significant role in the overall process.
Because of course a lot of people would have a relationship with their pharmacists, and it would be a lot handier, you know, for them to attend there, and maybe more likely. In relation to the IT system that is in place or is being developed to deal with this, is it there now? Have we got to that point?
Oh, well, the IT system has been up and running to various stages since the minimum viable product, as it was called, on December 29th, but essentially, it was developing a system to match each of the milestones of development throughout the process itself now. So currently, over 300,000 vaccine details have been recorded on the system. They've integrated the IT system into the four different GP systems, which allows us to report on vaccines administered through the GP network. The vaccination portal has been live for some time for healthcare workers, so they can register for the vaccine, and that's now being configured for the rollout to the general public. So, and I think that's the next important step. So people will be able to self-register and schedule and so on.
Okay.
So if you like, it's being developed to match the scale of itself. Very challenging, very complex. I mean, as you know, Ireland did not have a national immunization IT system, so this had to be developed from scratch. So people on that part of the project have been working flat out to meet all of these deadlines. And, for example, the functionality to enable the pharmacies to capture and record data of the vaccination, that's currently being worked on as well. So,
just on that system, will that be capable of producing vaccine passports if that's the road we end up going down at EU level?
Yes, well, the language being used is vaccination certification, so that it'll be a vaccine certificate. So the system has already been developed to have that functionality there. So that can either be a digital or hard copy certification. And we've got great support from the government CIO, Barry Lowry, and his team in that regard. And we, at the high level task force, we've looked at various models, and the significant discussion at the EU Council this week, and the Taoiseach is very interested in that concept of the vaccine certification. How it's used, and people are very careful about the language, you know, vaccine passport, immunity passport, it really is evidence of vaccination, but it'll be done to the highest quality in terms of the digital aspects of this and the integrity of the certification.
And I just want to put one last question to you from a listener. We have an email in saying, can you please ask the man in charge of vaccinations, I think that's going to be you for today, Breen, to go down the age groups. But if you could just say, this person is 45 with no idea whatsoever when they might get called for a vaccination. So for the general population, when, you know, if you're not in any of the high-risk cohorts or frontline workers or you know, the over 70s, that or the rest of that population, when could they expect to see those vaccinations begin?
So if we looked at down the list, there's a lot of special situations. There are decisions to be taken, by the way, in the coming weeks that by government in terms of some of the other cohorts around, like residents and long-term care facilities, and the definition of key workers and essential jobs and so on, and people working in the education sector. But if we take the broader population, first of all, people aged 55 to 64, we're talking at the moment early June there. And then when you go to the broadest population, people age 18 to 54, again, that's about mid-June. Those dates will come closer or go further out depending on the supply itself. But it's not that far away, and I think the way things are going, we'll start to reach these milestones very, very quickly now.
Okay. Oh, and just before I let you go, the dentists that they're lining up as well, will they be involved in this?
They will indeed, now, and I'm glad you asked me that. The Minister Donnelly signed a statutory instrument during the week. So dentists, orthodontists and optometrists are now, if you like, fully regulated to be vaccinated in this programme. So again, it'll add to the overall pool of vaccinators. We're delighted that expansion of the statutory instrument has happened at this stage.
Okay, I'll let you go. Professor Breen McCrann, many thanks for joining us with that update today. And there we'll take a break.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And I just want to go on the back of that interview with Breen McCrann to Róisín Shortall, who's joining us on the line. Róisín, I know you're having your online national conference today of the Social Democrats. So thank you for coming away from that to join us. Were you listening there to that interview, and were you reassured by what Breen McCrann had to tell us?
Good afternoon, Katie. Yes, I was listening to that, and Breen McCrann provided a huge amount of detail. What I'd like to see is just that detail set down on paper, because it's very hard to find out from any official source just exactly what the position is. The government or the HSE has started publishing the daily vaccination figures, but we don't know anything about the number of vaccines that have actually been delivered to the country and what is the expected delivery schedule. I think that would be very helpful if that was set out as part of the plan, so that everybody would know what to expect.
Yeah, I think to be fair to Breen McCrann, he did, I think, give us as much information as he could in relation to those kind of delivery dates and availability.
I accept that, Katie, but I think that should be set down in a plan so that everybody is aware of this. I just would make a couple of points there. I'm still continuing to get complaints, and I did up to yesterday, from constituents who are over 85 who expected to have got the vaccine by now, and they're contacting their GP clinics, and GPs are saying they haven't got any information yet. And just last night, I raised it with the HSE and got a response last evening. And they've said that, you know, stocks are being delivered as soon as they become available. So clearly, you know, we don't have the stocks yet for over 85s. And that's kind of concerning, because people's hopes were raised, and clearly the deliveries aren't coming on stream.
Yes, indeed, and we're getting some texts in here of Johnny saying his 89-year-old father is a GP in Dublin. Dublin 18 says no, his GP is saying no date for delivery there as well.
And it's not only the over 85s themselves, Katie, it's their GPs haven't been told when the deliveries are likely to come. Yeah. And I mean, a couple of weeks ago, there was an announcement that the HSE were starting to vaccinate over 70s. And I think they need to be just careful about the messaging, because lots of people over 70 thought they were going to get the vaccine very shortly. Yeah. Whereas that's going to be some weeks away. Okay. But, you know, I think we need a lot more up-to-date information and clear messaging so that people aren't disappointed.
Okay, Eoin O'Brien.
Sure, and I think Róisín is right. People need as much clarity and certainty at this point in time. People are really frayed. People's mental health is almost at breaking point. I mean, one of the things I think all of us are hearing in our constituency clinics, the kind of virtual ones we're doing, is just how people are just really at the end of this. So I do think there was a lot of good information for Breen there, and I welcome it. But there are two concerns. The first is the fact that we're all hearing stories of either vaccines that didn't arrive to GPs, or McClifford is writing in the Irish Examiner today of some GPs that received multiples of the vaccination order that they were meant to. it makes us worried that the logistical operation isn't what it needs to be. And as we get more vaccines and as the number of people to be vaccinated daily increases, the logistics might not be what they should be. So first of all, we need that to be addressed. We do also need the advisory group to look at, for example, family carers and school teachers, particularly certain categories of school teachers that are working with children where socially distancing isn't possible. So, you know, I think some of the changes to the prioritisation that were announced this week are very, very welcome. But I think there's a little bit more work to be done on that as well.
Okay. Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue, are you hearing those complaints as well from the ground of GPs not getting the deliveries there or not hearing when they'll even get a date for their deliveries?
Well, I think there has been some cases of that, and that certainly shouldn't be the case, Katie. And it's absolutely essential in terms of logistics, where there are some issues arising, that that's addressed immediately. And the government have made that very clear, working with the HSE as well. But listen, I want to recognise, first of all, I think there was a very good overview there given by Brian McGrath in relation to the rollout so far and also to the expected rollout over the next number of months. And I think there has certainly there has been a very successful rollout so far. In terms of going into March now, the fact that we'll be seeing 100,000 a week and certainly April, May and June, about 1 million doses a week actually administered, I think that does deliver the hope and the way out for us in terms of getting back to normal life again.
Okay.
Where any issues are arising, obviously, it's essential they have to be addressed because the logistics has to, and every prioritisation is being put in to ensure that they're in place and any issues that arise are dealt with immediately as well.
Can I move on? Sorry, Roisin. I want to move on to the mandatory quarantine issue. We know another 13 states in Central and South America added to the high risk list last night. We have the Dáil vote on Thursday. That led us on the mandatory hotel quarantine for people arriving from high risk countries. We know that's back in the Senate next week. Minister, like the opposition is united in the view that the government is not going far enough with this. Are you totally set against accepting any of the many amendments that are being put down against your bill?
Well, I think it's important to point out, Katie, that this legislation will see us have one of the most robust quarantining regimes in place across Europe. There's only a very small number of European countries that have any mandatory quarantine in terms of hotels in place at the moment. We've only seen the UK move to that in the last week to 2 weeks.
But isn't the issue there that we are... Sorry to cut across you, Minister, and I'm conscious that you're not in studio with me, but... is that not the case that we are, along with the UK, the other island in Europe, and that it would be much more difficult? We have that advantage, is that if you're going to come here, you have to arrive at a port of entry, and therefore that makes that a much more doable scenario than other countries.
Yeah, well, of course, we also have the fact that we're quite an open island, and of course we have the very close linkages to Northern Ireland, with Britain in particular. So I think obviously there's been a very clear quarantining requirement put in place for all and restriction for all international travel over the last period of time. It's been operating at a very, very low level. Anyone coming into the country has had to take and show a clear test at least 3 days in advance. And obviously now in relation to protecting against the variants that might emerge and the couple that have emerged, that's the reason for the actual mandatory hotel quarantine, which is a really severe restriction, but an important one, I think, to put in place. As I say, we've just seen Britain actually put a system in place in the last week to 2 weeks, and their legislation passed through the Dáil last week. There is 20 designated with another 13 last night. And also we have a national oversight group in place for variants of concern. And they will very closely monitor that now over the time ahead as well. And indeed respond promptly if there's any need and if the evidence and the science shows that there's a need for increasing that list as well.
OK, well, is that not the way to go about it, Eoin O'Brien? To just see, you know, monitor it closely and move and add more countries onto that list as they become concerning?
No, of course not. And we're a year into this. And the fact that we're not talking about a blanket restriction on non-essential travel into the country just makes no sense. Look, the ordinary person in the street who can't travel more than 5 kilometres from their home and isn't going into work unless it's absolutely essential cannot understand why a government would allow people to come into the country for non-essential reasons. So first of all, there should be that blanket restriction and it needs to be put in place as a matter of urgency. We also need to ensure that those people who are coming into the country or returning to the country don't just have that test before arrival, but have mandatory PCR tests 5 days after arrival in case they were asymptomatic, etc. So government is not doing anywhere close to enough. And I think it's adding to the frustration of the general public and further undermining the general public's confidence in the government's plan. People are making huge sacrifices. Vast majority of people are doing the right thing, and therefore we have blanket restrictions on people who are living within the state. We should have similar blanket restrictions for non-essential travel into the state.
Okay, I want to raise the issue of home quarantine. This is people who arrive and are asked to quarantine within their homes. We'd Minister Eamon Ryan on this programme last Saturday, and he told us that the Gardaí are calling to people's homes to check that they're quarantining in their homes. I think we can just have a quick listen to that.
The guards are checking. Like, the guards will call to the house of the people who are in those circumstances to check that they are where they say they are. And public health will follow up in terms of making sure we do the tests.
Now, the GRA told this programme last night that they still haven't received operational guidance on this from An Garda Síochána. And this is a month on now from when this measure was introduced. So what's happening, Minister? Can you tell us, I mean, are they doing this without having received operational guidance or is that pie in the sky?
Yeah, well, the law is clear in that there's a legal obligation on anyone who comes into the country. And of course, there's very few coming into the country, and that's rightly so. And it's only essential travel, and they have to have a clear test 3 days in advance of that. But the law is also then that you have to quarantine your home and take and show a PCR test 5 days after
is
that.
Is it acceptable that Gardaí have not yet been given any operational guidance on policing this?
Well, The obligation is on the Gardaí to apply the law, and that is the law as well, Katie. So, and my understanding is that it is being applied. And importantly, and of course, the legislation that is coming through the Dáil last week will put even more stringent requirements as well in place for a particular set of travellers that may, and it'll be very small, come from those countries that are designated. And again, the Gardaí, as is the case, will have the role of ensuring that the law is being applied and overseen there as well.
Róisín Shortall?
Well, Katie, I think it's really infuriating for people who are living under such severe restrictions to see that the government just are not taking the travel issue seriously. And they have never, from the very beginning, they have never taken the threat from travel and the importation of the virus in any way seriously, or, you know, had serious enforcement of the various provisions that they introduced. Look, there are many, many loopholes in relation to travel. Just take the whole issue of essential travel, for example. Figures I got that showed since Christmas, about 50% of people coming into the airports are travelling for non-essential purposes. The government drew up this list of 20 countries where they're going to, at some point over the coming weeks, introduce mandatory hotel quarantining. Only one of those countries is reported on has direct flights into this country, and that's the United Arab Emirates, and that accounts for about 7% of travel. They've added other countries now just in the last 24 hours. Again, they're South American countries. They're not the countries where significant numbers of travellers come from. So when you take, for example, those red list countries, many of them in Europe and in the US, they're red list countries, and people coming from those countries are required to what's called quarantine at home. Now, I mean, that is a contradiction in terms. You cannot quarantine at home. It just doesn't exist. It's unenforceable. And Antoinette Cunningham was very clear during the week that the comments of Eamon Ryan on your programme last Saturday just don't stand up. There is little or no enforcement of this new provision, just as there was little or no enforcement of the earlier arrangements for self-isolating or restricting your movements. And that's a huge problem. There is a big gap there in the government response. And, you know, it is just unforgivable that they will continue with the situation where there are so many loopholes in this. And it, particularly in the context of the new variants that are emerging now, and we have five new variants in Ireland at this point. Is that going to continue?
Okay, can I just ask Minister, Katie. I just want to put something very specific to you in relation to this, the issue of seasonal agricultural workers. We're hearing now that there will be 1,500 or so seasonal agricultural workers, and that season is beginning now, so they're beginning to arrive. Are they classified as essential workers first?
Yes, they are, and most of our seasonal agricultural workers would come from the Baltic or Balkan countries, and indeed our horticultural sector is very much dependent on them. 75% of the workers that would work in horticulture would traditionally be from those areas, and again there would be very clear obligations on them in terms of tests in advance and having to quarantine afterwards as well, Katie.
And
in
where
relation
will they
to
quarantine,
any of
Minister?
Those that would be.
Yeah, where will they quarantine?
Well, like any other essential workers that come into the country, they will have to quarantine at home and in accommodation. And there's a protocol being put in place with the industry in relation to that small number of horticultural workers. It will be really important in relation to actually being able to ensure horticulture industry, which is worth about 500,000 in terms of at farm gate level every year, are actually able to function and keep food supply chains going.
But Minister, but sorry, can I just the numbers be clear, aren't Katie, actually coming? Small. There's horticultural workers, there's also workers in meat factories and other vulnerable workers who come into this country. Now, in the main, those people are living in very overcrowded conditions. Very often it's dormitory-style accommodation. And, you know, are you seriously telling us that people are going to be quarantining in those circumstances? I mean, that doesn't stand up to any kind of scrutiny at all.
And we need to keep in mind that these are in many cases very poorly paid workers. Roisin is absolutely right. The types of communal accommodation they live in wouldn't allow for any form of quarantining. So I have to say I'm very concerned in the first instance for the health and safety of the workers themselves and the wider community within which they're situated. That once again, and the government has now had almost a year to plan for this because we were here last year, doesn't have a plan in place to ensure adequate quarantine, adequate protection and testing to ensure that whoever is coming in for whatever essential purpose is doing so in a safe way. Can I also say though, this is important, we also need to review the critical skills list to ensure that in fact we do need the same level of overseas workers, particularly at a time when so many people here are unemployed.
Well, I was going to ask the Minister that actually. I mean, are we absolutely, because I remember this time last year, last April, the Chief Medical Officer, Tony Holohan, and the then Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, talking about having sharing discomfort about these the seasonal workers that were arriving in the country at that stage. So are we absolutely sure that we need this number of workers coming into the country at this stage of the pandemic?
Yeah, well, I suppose the government does work with the sector very closely, Katie, to ensure that first and foremost we try and encourage and avail of local employment. And that would have been the case last year as well. And again, this year, there's a Help to Harvest campaign in place in relation to trying to ensure that we avail of as much local employment as possible. There is a reality here, though, that in terms of our horticulture sector, that about 75% of the labour, which amounts to about 1,500 seasonal workers for a number of months, over the course of a number of months, that it is very dependent on those. And where there isn't that labour available locally, and that has to be the first port of call, and it is, then for the sector to be able to operate and for us able to be able to produce horticultural produce, those workers who would carry out this work every year are very much essential to it. And there is very clear protocols in place in relation to how they would actually come in and indeed how the requirements in terms of quarantining and staying safe are taken on board and followed in those situations.
But protocols are no use, Minister, if there isn't adequate enforcement on the ground.
If I can finish, thanks, Owen. To listen to Roisin, or indeed to Owen, You'd think that they were saying something differently here a few months ago or even before Christmas in relation to seeking mandatory quarantine for all travellers, which certainly was not the case. There has been a change here in relation to the arrival of variants, which is what has prompted the introduction of the legislation by the government to the Dáil last week, which will, as I said, introduce one of the most robust and restrictive systems in Europe. Very few countries have that mandatory quarantine in place. We will be one of them. The UK have it in place as of
You've made that point. You've made that point, Minister. I'm going to move on because we are really up against the clock here. And I just want to briefly touch on something that's a huge issue for a lot of families this week. Their children finally getting back into the classrooms if they're from junior infants up to second class. We saw last night Deputy CMO Ronan, Dr. Ronan Glynn, advising parents not to gather at the gates when dropping off their children. Just in relation to how that is going to be managed by the schools, I'm joined on the line now by Damien White, President of the Irish Primary Principals Network. Damien, obviously this is a big issue and it's very much at the forefront of the NPHET's mind in terms of what could happen at the, not what's going to happen in the classroom, but what might happen in the playground while at school pick-up time.
Yeah, I think, Katie, that it's, I mean, people have lived with the virus, as some of your previous speakers have said, for a year and have gotten used to the whole notion of keeping their distance and so on. Now, one of those places that people can gather and tend to gather, and it's a sociable place, is the school gate, and all the more so when they haven't seen each other in quite some time. But Dr. Ronan Glynn did make it as clear as day. He said, please avoid congregating at school gates over the coming weeks. And that they're his own words. And I would echo those because I think that just getting the message out there, it's not that a school principal is going to go out to the school gate and police this or anything else, but just we're going to do everything we can to try and look after the children as safely as possible in the school. And we would ask that parents would play their own part as well by just dropping and going. And if they need to see the teacher or need to talk to a teacher, that can be done remotely.
Okay.
The important thing is the safety of everybody.
And speaking of the safety of everybody, the INTO has backed calls for face masks in schools. And that, of course, they're currently in use in post-primary schools, but for primary school children, perhaps in the senior classes in particular. What would be your view on that?
Yeah, I suppose everything is about trying to protect as best we can. And the NPHET, we would always go by NPHET's recommendations around that. That if NPHET feel that is what we should do, I think that we'll have to go along with that. It naturally, it's a little bit easier to enforce as people get older and perhaps maybe with older classes. But if it is going to be a measure that is going to ensure the safety of people, we would certainly push for it. And one thing, just when I'm on the safety, I think that we have to look after our special schools. I think Owen O'Brien alluded to it earlier. The staff there, you could change the word patient for pupil. They're interchangeable in terms of the work they do. It's very much the same. They're going to have to do something to prioritise those people to get vaccinated. I think it's just a must. Anyone that's working in a special school. Everything is about keeping people safe, and we will certainly be playing our part.
Okay, we'll leave that one there. Damien White, President of the Irish Primary Principals Network. Many thanks for joining us with that.
Tweet at Saturday RTE.
And you're welcome back. Now, the government's shared equity scheme has come in for a lot of criticism from, I suppose you could say, unusual places from within the civil service and even this week from Fine Gael councillors who have written to the minister asking for the scheme to be scrapped. And I see the minister today saying a lot of this criticism is bordering on the hysterical Owen O'Brien. You've got a motion in your private members' time this week calling for this to be scrapped.
Absolutely. And look, this isn't an affordable housing scheme. It's a developer-led scheme. It was first drafted by the two leading lobbyists for the property industry, PII and IIP. We've had a range of organisations, none of which have a reputation for being hysterical, the ESRI, Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, the Central Bank, all saying that they believe that this risks pushing up house prices. We also have very significant evidence from economists in the London School of Economics who are showing that a very similar scheme that's been in operation in England and Wales for 10 years has done exactly that, pushed up house prices by 6% in London, but also led to supply being stimulated in the wrong places. And now you have members of one of the government's party, nine councillors, including a parliamentary assistant to the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, saying it should be scrapped. This is a really dangerous scheme. So two things need to happen. It needs to be scrapped and removed from the affordable housing bill because it's not an affordable housing measure. And the €75 million allocated in the budget this year needs to be transferred to another scheme, which is called the Service Sites Fund, to deliver genuinely affordable homes that working people can rent or buy. This is back to the bad old days of developer-led housing policy that Fianna Fáil wrecked the economy with before. They shouldn't be allowed to do it again this time.
Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue, it's back to the bad old Fianna Fáil days of housing policy that failed.
No, certainly not. And I think, listen, there's a strong tradition of Sinn Féin not being very good at maths. And I think how anyone could say that a scheme which is going to be have €75 million of funding put to it in a mortgage market, for example, which is an €11 billion total, amounting to less than 0.5% of the overall, is going to inflate prices, I think.
But to be fair, and just to repeat this, this is not just Sinn Féin saying this. This is the ESRI very clearly saying it. Robert Watt, the former Secretary General of the Department of Public Expenditure, other senior civil servants, the Central Bank have raised concerns about it. This is not just opposition sniping.
No, you see, listen, I mean, and some... some have raised fair points in general, but I think in relation to it has to be looked at in terms of its place of overall government policy and the fact that we are looking to build additional under the Affordable Housing Bill, for example, which contains it. It contains three parts, and this being one of the three, the other two parts being about increasing the number of affordable homes built on state land and also taking forward the policy of cost rental. But as I say, the overall funding allocated to this amounts to about 0.5% in total of the mortgage market. And there is a reality here of a cohort of young people who are struggling to be able to get into a situation where they can actually own their own home. And it's important that we do have a scheme and in place which actually can support them to do that, and in a proportionate one. And I think this is an important measure by the government. It follows on as well from the 19,000 young people in particular who were helped under the Help to Buy scheme to purchase a home as well. And it does come very importantly, Katie, in the context of trying to increase supply and the many other measures that the government are taking, particularly in terms of, as well, our significant over €3 billion investment in public and social housing.
Sorry to cut across you, Minister, but we're just right up against the clock here. Roisin Shortall, we've only got a minute.
Katie, this is a really bad scheme. It has failed elsewhere in the UK. Anybody with any kind of expertise in this area, Central Bank, ESRI, senior public servants, they're all at one on this, that the scheme should be scrapped. You know, young people are being locked out of home ownership. What we need is housing that is affordable to people on average incomes. There is plenty of state land. What we should be doing is ensuring that we're building housing that is affordable to people on average incomes. So, and that can be done. It's been proven that the cost of housing for a three-bedroom house is about 250,000. Okay. That's the build cost.
Okay, I'm going to have to
be aiming to sell houses at that price.
Again, sorry to cut across you as well, Roisin, but we're going to have to leave it there. Just before we go, we have a notice here from An Garda Síochána that Stephen's Green is closed today on instructions from An Garda Síochána. Passengers, please be advised that on the Green Line services, no trams will be stopping at Stephen's Green inbound or outbound due to an expected protest. And they're saying accept our apologies for the inconvenience caused. Today's programme was produced by Mary O'Hagan. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator is Elaine Conlon, and Dave Gibson was on sound. From all of us here, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.